You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, you recall the wonderful story of Dr. David Beaumont from Cromwell, who has a practice called Positive Medicine. Wonderful story of his life and his better understanding his own health and getting himself into a position to help others. But that wonderful twist where he and his wife separated and met up years later, they had to sort of talk about it because they were meeting up for a friend's wedding. And they reconnected and they're together. And I could feel every listener having a collective sigh and a wee tear in their eye. So joining us this morning again is Dr. David Beaumont. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Rodney. Lovely to be back. And yeah, thank you for reminding me of that very personal story that I think it's really important for me to share. We talked about the four pillars of health and how the third pillar I talk about is emotional health, our relationships. This is about the health of my relationship and indeed about how that relationship healed.
Mm. Was it hard work?
No. No, it was very natural. Incredibly natural.
There's a funny thing. We're brought up on a very primitive understanding of love and relationships in the sense that you fall in love and live happily ever after.
Really? And there's that, who told that story?
And you have this wonderful thing where you fall madly in love and you can't bear to be out of each other's presence and you just want to be with them for the rest of your life. And then mortgage, kids, work. And if you're lucky, you build an even better relationship. And it's not that mad, lusty love where I can't bear to be away from you. It's this deep, committed love of actually sharing life and children. And, well, to coin the old phrase, becoming one flesh.
And I think that's a lovely description, sharing life, which is such an important concept. Sharing life's journey, actually, because life's a journey. One step more than that, it's about also about fulfilling each other's needs.
Mm.
And if we neglect to remember that, not I need my needs fulfilled, but what can I do to fulfill your needs, then my goodness, that's the recipe for success. Let me tell you now, Rodney, a man of experience like me, we needed 7 years apart in order to grow back together. And we now talk about the 7 year itch in the to which most people mean it.
7 year itch to get back together.
Yeah.
Were you lonely for those 7 years?
Oh, God. Well, that's an interesting one. Dreadfully lonely initially. And I got awful FOMO when my friends said, oh, my goodness, we went to the pub last night. Oh, we had such a great time. And they're thinking, why didn't you call me? I was at home all alone. And to be honest, when you're single, particularly for the first time ever in your life, you're not necessarily great company. It's really interesting and you get forgotten. But what happened was a memory of childhood, a memory of my seven-year-old self. I think I mentioned Matey to you last time.
Yes.
My dad used to call me Matey, and I remembered Matey. And Matey used to spend hours down the stream by himself in the woods, learning the names of the butterflies and the wildflowers. He loved his own company. And suddenly I thought, well, I'm going to share it. Maybe I should just spend more time in nature. And it didn't take me very long to realize that I love my own company. And do you know what happened to the loneliness? Yes, you do. Just disappeared. I stopped being lonely. And I stopped being needy of other people as well. And of course, they then started to invite me out to the pub and we were back to having fun again.
Well, what a terrible wrench. And what a wonderful story. Do you think you and your wife were made for each other?
Yes, we knew. Right from the start, we knew we were soulmates. Maybe it's an overused expression, but totally. We do get each other's needs. Do we fulfill each other's needs all the time? No, we don't. Of course we don't. Am I fulfilling my wife's needs at this moment in time, this phase of my life? No, I'm not. And I know I need to work harder on that because I'm a bit distracted at the moment, Rodney. I've got a lot going on in positive medicine and it's big picture, but I talk about the four pillars of health and making sure you integrate them all. I mustn't neglect that pillar. So keep
so easy to do.
It is. It totally is.
And that thing about men not multitasking is true, but men also have almost obsessions. They have a focus and it's laser-like.
Yes.
And I can remember I could be working away and I could have two kids screaming and I wouldn't hear them. And the pot boiling over. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Because you're just absorbed by what you're doing. It's a man thing.
Yeah.
And we have that luxury because the woman in their lives are running around aware of those things. Tell us about healing. Because that has to be you're sick or injured.
Yeah.
And you need to heal. Yeah. That's the point of medicine, right?
Really?
That's
not what I was taught.
Isn't that funny?
Yes. Yes.
So what were you taught?
I was taught how to treat people. I was taught how to cure people. My medical training started 45 years ago in 1979, the era of Nixon's war on cancer, billions pumped into finding a cure for cancer. The five major cancers were going to be cured within 5 years. How did that go? The thing is, we'd already beaten infectious diseases. Infections were by then treated with antibiotics. Incredibly successful.
Been to the moon?
Yeah, we'd been to the moon. That's right. That's right. It was the same decade that I started, the same decade that we went to the moon. I started training. And so I wasn't taught about healing. So the concept of healing has been foreign to me for most of my medical practice. Some doctors even struggle with the word healing because it's kind of been appropriated by alternative health professionals and alternative practices and healers. And so there is a risk that it's actually looked on disdainfully. But actually, what is healing? Healing is what our body does naturally, given the right circumstances.
So with healing, you think of your body doing it over time and maybe a professional helping you with the healing process. With a cure, you're thinking, I've got something wrong with me. I need to go to see someone who will apply a cure, and it's external to the body.
Totally. And you've just nailed it, Rodney. Those are the two paradigms. And for me,
it's a funny thing when you see it, right? You can't I keep saying this now, you can't unsee it because, like,
no, that's right.
If you went to the pharmacist with your prescription, you're not there saying, will this help me heal? You're there saying, will this cure me?
Yes, totally. If you go to the doctors with a chest infection and you get a prescription for antibiotics and you go to the pharmacy and the script is converted into antibiotics, you picture the antibiotics curing you.
Yes.
That's nonsense. That's not what's happening inside the body. The antibiotics are facilitating the body's ability, the body's immune system's ability to fight off that infection to heal. Antibiotics don't heal. Antibiotics don't cure. Either. It's the body that's healing. The best example of healing, the easiest example of healing is when you cut yourself and you put a plaster cast on it and the skin edges come together. If it's a really neat cut and you bring it together, it's well on its way to healing within 3 days. In that situation, acute healing, it's not a slow process at all. That's healing, and that's healing as doctors understand it. But what about healing as applied to chronic disease or chronic illness? And that's where modern medicine struggles. We don't expect to heal in those situations. We don't expect either to cure. If you go to see a doctor with chronic fatigue syndrome, ME/CFS, it is highly likely that you will hear what a lot of people I see hear, which is, I'm really sorry, you've got ME, there's no cure for it. End of. So where does healing come in there? And unfortunately, because the medical paradigm is built on curing and treating and curing, we don't look at the possibility of creating the circumstances for healing to occur. I'm proud to be a doctor. I'm proud to be a healer. I heal people. Well, actually, no, I don't. I teach people how to heal themselves. Doctor as healer. The word doctor means teacher. For me to be a healer as a doctor means that I teach people how to heal themselves. And how do we do that? By creating the right circumstances in our lives, within all four pillars of health.
I suspect that 100 years ago, doctors saw themselves as healers.
They totally did. And let me just be really clear. I'm not unique in this belief.
No.
There are many doctors, including general practitioners, who do see themselves as healers. And they may have different definitions of what a healer is to me. But there are an awful lot of doctors who don't like the word healer and wouldn't refer to themselves as healers.
And would it be a post-World War II thing?
Yes.
With pharmaceutical industry rising?
Totally, totally.
So much of the world and our approach to it changed with World War II. You know, we went from being capitalist to socialist. We went from laissez-faire to central planning because it was this idea of organizing everyone to fight this totalitarian total war going onto a war footing. And the idea became that, oh, we're not going to allow people to be free to enjoy their life and liberty in the pursuit of happiness. We're going to have these national goals. You know, we'll put man on the moon, just like we stormed the beaches of Normandy. We will eliminate cancer. We look to experts in medicine and to governments. And so we went from the humble country doctor helping you heal to this industrial complex. It's amazing when you see it, right?
You've nailed it. And once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, as you said. And hey, I mean, obviously, I'm from the UK originally. 1947, the end of the war, 1947 was the inauguration of the NHS in the UK.
Yes.
It was a national treatment service. We don't have a healthcare system now. We have a disease care system, which is failing us and the people who work within it because it's built on a false premise.
And of course, it's like how the Soviet Union organized their grain production.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
And
well,
we knew that would fail.
the NHS was factory farming people's health and
Yes.
with the aim of treating and curing because my training was in the heyday of medical science. I was training how to be a scientist, and science was going to resolve everything, which also.
And we had that wonderful, I remember having this wonderful materialist view of what a human is, that
Oh,
it's a
yes.
collection of molecules and atoms, and that we would uncover absolutely how it all ticked. We understood the DNA code. We understood how that worked. We knew the secret of life, bit more effort, and then we went not just curing the body, but we could cure the mind.
Well, we've still got the mind-body dichotomy, have
Yes.
I mean, there's. I mean, let's face it. Doctors struggle with people coming with mental health problems. Doctors have so little in their armamentarium to treat problems with the mind, and therefore let's prescribe antidepressants. And hey, I mean, all of the research shows that antidepressants may be slightly better than placebo, but in many trials, they're not. Prescribe a sugar pill may be as good as an antidepressant on average. Having said that, that doesn't account for outliers, and I'm not
Yes.
dissuading people from taking
Sure.
antidepressants.
Sure. No, we get that. That.
I've taken
Yeah.
antidepressants with good effect.
Yeah. Because we've carried over that cure philosophy to the mind. So if you come in to the doctor with a troubled mind, it is diseased, or there's a disease with a name attached to it, to which we need to apply a cure, which is a prescription, and you take this and it will cure your mind, just like we cured your body.
So, I mean, depression, Rodney, is caused by serotonin deficiency. That's what I was taught at medical school. What absolute rubbish. It was a theory that was presented as a fact, which was later found to be completely incorrect. Now, interestingly, one of the major classes of antidepressant drugs are called SSRIs,
Yes.
selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They increase the amount of serotonin, which logically suggests should treat a serotonin deficiency, and they do appear to help, maybe slightly better than placebo. But you're right. I was taught that depression is a biochemical condition, not that it's actually to do with life, which of course it is. So your point about materialism is well made and incredibly important. The medical model I was taught was the centuries-old Newtonian concept
Yes.
of the body as machine.
Yeah.
Let's look further and further down the microscope. Let's do more and more analysis to find out what's wrong with the machine and invent a drug to fix that part. Oh my goodness, your uric acid is raised. You've got crystals in your joints. That's what's causing your gout. Let's put you on allopurinol, which actually inhibits the production of uric acid. Oh, how perfect is that? Perfect in its simplicity and missing the question, why is your uric acid raised in the first place? What is happening in your life? Let's come out of the microscope and instead look upwards at our, not up, away from our bodies into our lives and find out what's happening nutritionally and exercise-wise and lifestyle-wise. And what if that's impacting on all of this? Our bodies are not linear cause and effect.
No. But that's a funny thing, isn't it? Because doctors are delivering a service that we want.
Yes.
We don't want to go to the doctor and have the doctor say, oh, what's going on in your life? You want to say, bugger off. It's not your business.
Yeah.
And then they say, well, have you thought of shedding a few pounds? Oh, here we go. You know, maybe you should go for a walk and spend a bit of time in nature. No. We go to the doctor.
Yeah.
We want a brief description of our symptoms.
Yep.
Him to look into our file, him or her. I got to be careful.
Yep.
And write a script, which as we go out, we'll drop into the chemist shop and we'll take those pills for a set amount of time or forever, depending on what we're suffering from. And that's what we want, because everything else is hard and time-consuming.
And hey, there's nothing wrong with that if it works, except in chronic disease, it blatantly doesn't work.
Mm.
We're fooling ourselves if we think it's going to. And I can give examples. As we go into this, but let's just stay where you are in the consultation. Let's focus on general practice. General practice has become transactional. It's a 15-minute consultation that we pay for. We're paying a lot for now, but not as much as the GPs need to fund their practices. So there's a mismatch there. But that transaction says, I'm paying for 15 minutes of your time. What I need is a prescription or an investigation or a referral. You're right. There's no time in that 15 minutes to get lifestyle advice. And even, I spent years as a GP telling people to stop smoking, lose weight,
drink less,
get a better work-life balance, come back and see me in a month's time and let's see if your blood pressure's gone down. Guess what? It didn't work because they said bugger off. I don't do that anymore. I've stopped telling people what to do. It's not my role. I've stopped advising people what to do, would you believe? What I do now is ask people what they want. My first question, my assessment is, what is the greatest hope for your health? And they tell me, I don't want to have this condition. Or, do you know what? I really would like to lose 10 kgs. Or, I'd like to stop smoking. Or, I'd like to cut down my alcohol. And what I say then is, well, the first stage is analysis. We need to find out what's not working, which is the medical science principle of analysis. I'm going to help you do your own analysis. I don't do the work. I get them to do the work. I don't have 15-minute consultations, as you can imagine. But at the end of it, they go, do you know what? I'm going to lose 10 kgs and I want a plan for how to do it. So we then go through the reverse of analysis, which is synthesis. Synthesis is putting the parts together. And when in synthesis, when you put the parts together, you create a whole that is greater than the sum of the parts. That's systems thinking. That's what's missing from modern medicine. The analysis is essential, but we need the synthesis. We need to then put it together. So I help people to develop their own 12-point healing plan.
Is it always 12 points?
Yes.
Not the same 12 points?
There, never in the history of my consultations have the 12 points been the same. You'll never believe this, Rodney, but everybody is unique, which is why the treatment for gout is not allopurinol in every person, because every person is different. So there has to be a unique approach for every single patient.
And 12 points.
Doesn't have to be hard because they come up with their own answers. The answers are always within.
Isn't that astonishing?
Yeah. I'll explain why it's 12 points.
Yeah.
It's really simple. I've talked about the four pillars of health. What we do is to do an analysis of the four pillars, where they're at with those four pillars.
Go through the four again.
Physical health, psychological health, emotional health, our relationships, and spiritual health, what brings meaning and purpose to life for me.
Mm-hmm.
So having gone through those four pillars, we then do the synthesis by coming up with three actions for each of the four.
Got it.
That's the 12.
And an action might be go for a walk for an hour in nature, or?
It might. Yeah, you know, well, that's actually the good thing about integrating the four pillars is that going for a walk
in a
nature covers two pillars.
Yeah.
It covers your physical health and your spiritual health. Go for a walk in nature with your partner and you're covering three pillars because you're actually spending time together. And, if you do those three pillars, go for a walk in nature with your partner, you're also improving your psychological health. Bang, all four pillars covered off with something really simple and free. Not even a prescription charge, assuming that comes back.
And interesting, while having a doctor consult with you for an hour or two is expensive, it's not expensive if it actually heals you.
No. Whereas going for a doctor consultation for your diabetes every 3 months or even every 6 months for life adds up. And you don't heal because you're not expected to. There is no cure for type 2 diabetes.
In theory or in practice?
Well, I'm being provocative. There is no cure.
Yes.
There's no pharmaceutical cure. So what's the treatment for type 2 diabetes?
Oh, I can tell you.
First line treatment is metformin. Okay. Then there's a whole range of different drugs you can take. And once control of those is inadequate, then you might have to go on insulin. And then you're on insulin for life. And that's the progression. So can I tell you a story?
Please.
You know I'm good at stories. Please. So 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with prediabetes. One bit of technicality, the average sugariness of your blood is measured by a figure called HbA1c. And once you get above 40, you've got prediabetes. 10 years ago, mine was 42. And my doctor said, we're going to have to monitor that. And I've had my prediabetes monitored every year since and watched it drift up slowly. And in January 2023, my HbA1c hit 47. And my doctor said, we're going to have to monitor that. And I thought, what's he monitoring? Why is he still monitoring it? And it suddenly hit me. Once you get to 50, you've got diabetes and you can be put on metformin and called a diabetic and treated as such. And I just thought, oh my goodness, how silly have I been? Why haven't I taken control of this situation? There must be a better way. I mean, I was living a healthy lifestyle, but I went to see Dr. Glenn Davis, who the year before had been voted General Practitioner of the Year in New Zealand for reversing type 2 diabetes in 150 of his patients in Taupo. And I went to see Glenn, and he spent an hour with me and explained to me what was happening in my body in terms of the reaction to the amount of carbohydrate and energy and activity I was undertaking. And he said, David, this is really simple. This is really easy. You just need to go on therapeutic carbohydrate restriction. We can sort this out. So I did. I went on an ultra low carb diet. And within 3 weeks, my HbA1c was 40. Within 6 months, it was 34, which is the HbA1c of a 30-year-old. And I felt bloody amazing. And accidentally, I lost 10 kgs in the process. I didn't aim to lose 10 kgs. That was a beneficial side effect.
And that would have helped with the diabetes.
It's gone. It's gone. So there was no treatment. He taught me how to heal myself. He taught me how to create the circumstances for healing. But this is the magic. There is magic to this, Rodney, because when you create the right circumstances, healing can occur incredibly quickly. And this is the experience with many type 2 diabetics who are reversed. They call it reversal of type 2 diabetes. It's actually healing. Healing happens very quickly.
And it's basically taking out refined carbohydrates and sugar.
Well, it's actually taking, yeah, it is. It's definitely taking out all refined carbohydrates, but also significantly restricting any carbohydrates.
Yes. So ketogenic diet?
Yeah, I try and avoid that expression because yes. It can be a little bit provocative.
It's loaded, isn't it?
It is loaded. It is. But I've recently bought the textbook of therapeutic carbohydrate restriction. It's an enormous textbook full of all the evidence for how therapeutic carbohydrate restriction works in all manner of different conditions, all the way up to and including cancer. Mm. And we have a neurologist in Hamilton, New Zealand, who's using therapeutic carbohydrate restriction and fasting to treat advanced brain cancer and getting amazing results with it.
Because the sugar feeds the cells.
Yes. And interestingly, our cells can use either glucose or ketones, which is the breakdown product of fats, to produce energy to run the systems of our body. Mm. Cancer cells can't. Cancer cells pretty much can only use glucose. So if the rest of your body is using ketones, then actually cancer cells really struggle. Cancer cells have got a very disturbed metabolism. They've got very poorly efficient mitochondria, which are the energy factory of the cells. The mitochondria in cancer cells just don't work properly. Deprive them of sugar, deprive them of energy, do a bit of fasting, and your cancer cells are struggling. Add chemotherapy into that, and suddenly the chemotherapy has more effect. This isn't instead of medical science, it's as well as. But better than that, it's what I can do for myself.
So do we look upon the textbook of therapeutic carbohydrate restriction and the evidence for it and the seemingly failure of the medical industry to take it on board, do we look at that as just, oh, well, these things take time? Or do we be more jaundiced and say, well, there's a problem here, because how do you profit out of having people restrict carbohydrates compared to giving them those drugs you mentioned earlier? It's pretty dark if you start to look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I tell you what, I hope nobody from the pharmaceutical industry is listening to this conversation, Rodney.
Well, I hope they all are.
No, because they'll have a hitman on me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's that serious, right?
Yeah, you're right. This is, but what I am saying, I'm just going to say it again, just to call the hitman off, I'm saying this is what I can do plus what the doctor can do. Mm. This isn't the doctor-patient relationship, which is hierarchical. Doctor tells patient what to do and prescribes. This is the person-doctor partnership, where actually the most important person in the relationship is the patient, is the person themselves, is me and you.
So I'm a listener listening to Dr. David Beaumont. Oh, I love this man. Everything he says rings so true in my gut, in my head, every part of me. This is what I want. Because I'm a person that takes responsibility. I'm talking the listener. Where do I find a doctor like this? For myself.
Well, I'm now training doctors, nurses, psychologists, health coaches to the positive medicine model. And I'm doing so in the Positive Medicine Academy, which is part of the positive medicine community, which you can access through positivemedicine.com.
Ah. So there is a network of doctors thinking like you.
There are.
And I could book a consultation and I could give it a whirl.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah. And let me just be really clear. There is a hardcore group of doctors who totally believe in therapeutic carbohydrate restriction as well. I'm not by myself here. Definitely not by myself.
I found it astonishing. Someone told me this and I didn't believe it. And it just shows you how odd the world is. That the person that invented or suggested frontal lobotomies as a way to cure mental illness has got a Nobel Prize. It might have been you that said it when you were last on. And I thought, that's impossible.
Mm.
I looked it up. They did. Just sort of cutting out a bit of the disconnecting part of the brain as a cure. It's horrific, isn't it? And how funny was it? This is a layman talking. How funny was it that I think it was Australian researchers established and got a Nobel Prize that ulcers were what? A result of a bacterial infection.
Yeah, yeah, yes. And the doctor who said that, first of all, was absolutely ridiculed by the profession.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah. Yeah, everybody knew that ulcers were caused by acid and stress. And he said, well, what about all these bacteria, all these Helicobacter pylori that you find in ulcers? And they said, oh, chance finding. You're right. It takes the rebels to change the paradigm. Mm. Guess what, Rodney? I'm a rebel.
Yes, you're an outlaw.
I'm an agitator. I'm I'm a medical maverick. I'm a positive disruptor for good. We need to shake up the system. You said, shall we just wait for this to happen? I do think that our medical students are being trained to a new model. The medical students are being trained to a new curriculum, which is fantastic news for the world in 20 years' time. It's not good enough, Rodney. We need a shift to occur. We need a paradigm shift. The wonderful thing is that when paradigm shift was first described, it was in terms of scientific revolutions. How does science change? And the answer is it doesn't change gradually. What happens is that anomalies are spotted and people start to question how the anomaly fits with the current model, because it clearly doesn't, which is why it's called an anomaly. And then somebody says, well, surely there must be another way, a better way. And somebody provides an explanation for a better way. And then all of a sudden, there's a paradigm shift. And it's obvious to everyone. That's changing worldview. That's changing the way you believe the world works. You've been doing that all the way through this discussion, haven't you? Your worldview has been changing the whole time.
And common sense.
Yes.
Shifts.
Yes. Well, it's obvious. You said, I feel it in my gut. This is true. Yeah. And you do. This is intuitively correct. That's where your mind works, in your gut, when you're in your intuition. I just know this to be true. Can I go one stage further, Rodney?
Please.
You see, for the last 24 years since I left general practice in 2000 to become an occupational physician, I've been working on the fundamental questions of medicine. What is health? What is disease? What is healing? I think I have the answer. And you would not believe how simple it is. You know the word homeostasis?
Yes.
The way the body maintains control and stability in the face of changing circumstances. Well, actually, when we're in health, our body is in perfect homeostasis, perfect balance, harmony. Health is homeostasis. What is disease? Disease is disrupted homeostasis.
A departure.
What's diabetes? Diabetes is disrupted blood sugar homeostasis. That's all it is. What is healing? Healing is reestablishing homeostasis. It's creating the circumstances for our bodies to restore homeostasis. In the case of diabetes, by therapeutic carbohydrate restriction. And what happens when the body heals? It restores, our bodies are amazing healing machines. Homeostasis is an incredible ability, and that's why healing happens fast. Healing is restoring homeostasis.
And there's a network of doctors that we can find on, tell me the webpage again.
Positivemedicine.com.
One word, positivemedicine.com.
Yeah.
Can I pull you up on something?
Of course you can, Rodney.
I find that everyone having a journey overworked, because it's sort of, I'm just teasing this out for you and for listeners, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but it sounds like a 23-year-old university student, I'm on my journey. And you're thinking, oh, dear God, save me. Because your own journey to me sounds self-indulgent, but also, where's the journey to?
Where do I go from here?
Yeah, where's the journey? Where's this journey going that we talk of? It's your journey. Where are you off to?
Yeah. It's a really good question, Rodney. You know what I want the answer to that to be. I want to spread this message New Zealand wide, and then further afield. My dream.
Oh, I guess I love your journey because, your journey is an aspiration for health for the world. And I get that. I love that. But you know how maybe I'm conflating two things. You know how you have these people and they're all talking about their journey and they go to India and discover their Buddhist self and it's all their journey. That drives me bats.
Oh, I see what you mean. You mean the idea of the journey as a concept.
Inside me, I'm on my journey, you know, I'm on my life's journey. I tell you another one that annoys me.
Do you know what, Rodney? I'm going to disagree with you, but you carry on.
Yeah, is this idea that you go to school and say, oh, follow your passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's the stupidest advice I've ever heard.
Totally disagree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was Joseph Campbell who came up with this expression originally. And his expression was follow your bliss. So Joseph Campbell was an American mythologist who discovered that ancient myths around the whole globe at a time before the World Wide Web all told one story, which was the hero's journey.
Oh, I have read that book. It's what is it called? And it's the same story over and over and over in many different formats.
Yes, the hero with a thousand faces.
That's it. Yeah, I read that book.
Yeah. And the point is that the story of the hero and the journey of the hero is as old as humanity itself because it's our story. I totally believe, Rodney, that we are all on a journey. And that journey is unfolding minute by minute. We can have aspirations. And you're right, mine's an aspirational journey. But sometimes the aspirations actually are not fulfilled in reality. And our reality is here and now, in this very minute.
Well, I stand to be corrected.
Oh, no, it's all right. I'm being deliberate.
No, it's just a great thing. I just get sick of hearing about journey. And then I tell you why we're not all Odysseus. You know what I mean? We're not all Homeric heroes.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are, Rodney.
No.
Why are you not a hero? And the point of the hero's journey is that actually it's the story of ourselves. That's why when we go to see a blockbuster movie like Harry Potter or The Wizard of Oz or Star Wars, we get so engrossed in it because it's all based on the hero's journey.
A thousand faces.
We identify with the hero because we should be the hero. If you're not the hero, who are you? Well, there's two other possibilities. You're either the victim or the perpetrator. And victims and perpetrators often go together, and victims often become perpetrators. But who would you rather be? So this is actually about becoming the hero of your own life story. This is authority. This is personal authority. The ability. I love the word authority because at the start of it, it has.
I'm getting this.
Author. Author, I am the author of my own life story. I'm writing the next chapter of my own life story.
This is the concept of taking control of your health.
It is, and control of your life. This is self-determinism.
Because you're the author of your health.
Yeah. Māori call it rangatiritanga, or better than that, tino rangatiritanga, ultimate self-authority, ultimate sovereignty. This is what Māori are asking for. It's actually what we should all claim. Sovereignty of ourselves is a personal human right.
and that goes to our health. Wow.
It does.
I think I have to be standard corrected. I just felt the journey overworked, follow your passion overworked.
Yeah, but
I do love the point about being the author of your own life. Mm-hmm. I do love taking authority, taking self-responsibility for your situation. And so much of what we do, and I'm the worst example, is an attempt to dodge that. So I get all that. And, of course, that allows you to be manipulated because take this, come to the doctor, have a 15-minute consultation, take this, sign this chit, and away you go. And you think, oh, it's great, we've got a healthcare system that is free.
Yeah.
And that NHS and centralized healthcare, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And we have seen that with – do you – you still have a practicing medical certificate?
Yeah. No, I'm a consultant, occupational physician.
Could you run the risk of getting into trouble?
Well, I mean, if I wasn't completely backed by science, maybe. I mean, this is not quackery. This is not maligning modern medicine. It's saying there is something which is complementary to modern medicine. It's not alternative. I don't practice homeopathy or naturopathy or any other.
But I was thinking along the lines of we were discussing about paradigms.
Yes.
And the medical council and these authorities, by their very nature, are about maintaining and being conservative, which is a good thing too. So you have your radicals and you have your conservative bit and it rubs together and out of that you get a better result.
Yep.
But by their nature, the medical council represents the great mass of doctors and that's conservative. That's good. Doesn't get easily taken over. But the mavericks are rubbing up against that.
Yeah. Okay.
So and you're a self-described maverick.
Yes. So it won't surprise you to hear, Rodney, that I've been to the medical council and said, hey, guys, I'm thinking of practicing like this. What do you think?
Ah, clever.
And they said, tell us a bit more. And they said, tell me again what you do. You're an occupational physician. So you're a practicing specialist doctor. Yeah. No, well, actually, this is preventative medicine.
Okay.
It's completely aligned with the principles of medicine because it's about preventing disease.
There you go.
Yeah. And as I say, I mean, things like reversing type 2 diabetes is now really well established worldwide. There are many doctors worldwide who are now practicing reversing type 2 diabetes.
You're a great presenter because you say there's no cure, but you can heal and prevent it.
Yes. And we're take modern medicine. I'm saying, take your modern medicine, but follow what advice you can get, what learning you can get to heal yourself. And maybe, just maybe, you won't need your insulin or your metformin because that's what reversal means. It means they're off medication.
Right. There you have it. That's Dr. David Beaumont, practicing in Cromwell, just down the road from me. You can find his webpage, positivemedicine.com. You can find a network of doctors throughout New Zealand who share and understand this philosophy. It is a head shift, and sometimes I get it, and sometimes I struggle. But that's what mavericks do. David, it's so wonderful that you come on our show. We are truly blessed to have you.
Thank you, Rodney. I've loved coming back. It's been a great discussion. I've loved it.
Yeah. Oh, me too. We'll talk soon. There you go. Send us a text, 2057. Email us, inbox at radleycheck, RCR.radio. I'm going to have to reevaluate my things about my irksomeness about Juni and passion.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.